Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box of BangTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Monday, June 17th. I am your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB is number 200. We'll get you that 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Monday, Thursday format here with the Bettors Box, as you know. Monday is the Monday mailbag at Skating Tripods on Twitter or Adam at BangTheBook.com via email to send me your questions. Also, Adam at BangTheBook.com via email to get the notes for the show mailing list. There's about 250 strong here for the program. So if you want to get on that list, Adam at BangTheBook.com. My daily MLB picks and tips piece updated every day over at the website. NFL season win totals are rolling out. We're about halfway through those over at the website. Our writer is doing a great job with that, so definitely make sure you check those out. And also college football coming soon. I've done some work handicapping the new head coaches for both the Power 5 and the Group of 5. I recalculated my home field advantages yesterday, so I'll be posting that article this week. And looking to get my first round of power ratings up over the next couple of weeks. So that'll be coming your way over at BangTheBook.com. Trying to get through some of that research here, trying to fix what's wrong in Major League Baseball. It's a very, very busy time of year, to say the least. So bear with me, trying to get to everything that I possibly can here. A lot of other sites take it easy over the summer. We don't at BangTheBook.com, your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. All right, so we got the Monday mailbag here for you. Got a couple of questions for that. Then we'll go beyond the box score, go down the lines. I'll give you a couple of picks for tonight's action. And then a preview here of the week ahead, including a handful of suggested series bets to make here for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. All right, so we go into the Monday mailbag here. We start with a question on Twitter from StephanMV1986. Says here, in all honesty, I really don't think a healthy Astros team comes close to the Dodgers. I truly think everyone is playing for second this year. Numbers aside, I just see it and it's in my gut. Is that value even at 4-1? And he elaborates here to say, what I mean is, do you create value for yourself or does the market create value for you? Strange question, but I know I wanted to ask it for the Monday mailbag. I don't think it's a strange question at all. In fact, I think it's a fascinating question. Now, I will say this. Everybody's definition of value is different. Some people are going to go out there and say, well, you know what? There's no value in a losing ticket. Other people are going to say there's value in getting out in front of a line move, getting the best price, and then obviously things are going to play out however they're going to play out. So everybody has a different definition of value. For me, I think there can be value in a losing ticket because you're betting on the expectation that that ticket wins more often than what the market line suggests. So to me, that is value. If you're getting the best of it and you're getting a favorable situation, win or lose, I think that's value. So for me, I think grabbing prices makes a lot of sense. Having a diversified portfolio makes a lot of sense. Creating those hedging opportunities for yourself makes a lot of sense. So I do think that my definition of value is a little bit more is a little bit different than some people's. I think it's one of those things where I have a broader definition of value. Some people only see value in situations where they expect to win. And sometimes you're not going to win. Sometimes you're going to bet a side, a total, something like that, that will lose more often than it wins, but you find value in that opportunity because it's going to win more often than the market expects it to win. Now, when you talk about World Series futures, it's pretty unique because we've got several division leaders that are probably already locked into the playoffs and are likely locked into avoiding that wild card game. Teams like the Dodgers, teams like the Astros, teams like the Twins. When you look at the Dodgers here in particular, which is basically what the question is, you know, at 4-1, do they have value? Well, let's look at this situation here. First of all, they're up 6 games on the Braves for home field advantage. They're up, what, about 10 in the division? So they're going to win the division, and they're probably going to get home field. Now, that's relevant because they're a very good home team, and it's a long travel out to the West Coast. because you have to think that the wild card teams are likely going to come from either the East Coast or the Midwest. So you're going to run into a situation where you've got long travel after that wild card game, quick turnaround, you burn your frontline starter in that wild card game just trying to get to the division series. The Dodgers don't have to worry about any of those things. So in that respect, it's a big deal for them to have a big division lead and to have this big advantage already in the home field department. So is there value at 4-1? I think there can be. And I think that you create value for yourself in the market by having an understanding of the landscape, having multiple outs. You know, is there more value at 4-1 than at +350? Yes, there is. So in order to create value for yourself, you have to have multiple outs to get the best price. You don't create a whole lot of value for yourself if you have one sports book and the Dodgers are +300 and you can get them at +400 or +450 out there somewhere else in the market. That is not value. That is not value at all, because you're taking a price lower than what's out there in the market. You're creating yourself a bad bet at that point in time. Whether or not the Dodgers win is largely irrelevant. At 3-1, the Dodgers basically have to win for you. At 4-1, maybe you have some hedging opportunity in the World Series, likely against the Astros, could be against the Twins or the Yankees or the Red Sox if they get things going. But you want to get the best possible price to create yourself value. Now, can the market create value for you? Absolutely. Now, in this case with the Dodgers, I don't think so. But the market can create value for you with adjusted prices, overreaction, perception biases. If you know what you want, know where you can get it, and you're getting it at a price point that you want, which in this instance would be the best price out there in the market, then yeah, there's value on the Dodgers. If you believe that the Dodgers are the best team in baseball and you're out there getting the best price that you can, then I think there's value in that. Now, obviously, the Major League Baseball playoffs are absolutely crazy. Anything can happen. But when you look on paper here, who beats the Dodgers in the National League? The Braves can't. They don't have the pitching. The Brewers, I don't think they have the pitching either. I don't know if they have the offense to keep up this season either. Houston can beat them, but they don't face Houston until the World Series. So when trying to look at this from all sides to determine if there's value, is 4-1 the best market price that you can get? That's question number one. Question number two, who beats this team? I think there's one team in baseball that I would give a very reasonable chance of beating the Dodgers in a playoff series format. It's the Houston Astros. So you have created value for yourself if you could check off those two boxes, and then the market creates value by having different prices out there. You know, if every dealership sold Silverados, but they sold them all at different prices, different financing, stuff like that, that's a marketplace that creates value for you if you go to the right dealership. It's the same thing here with baseball. Everybody has World Series futures odds up. But if you go out there and get the best price, if you survey the market, find the best price, deposit there if you don't have money there, or if you do have money there, use it to make that bet. That's the market creating value for you. Because it's a competitive market, because there are a lot of different outlets out there that want your money. They would love to hold your Dodgers money for the next 4 months. They don't mind, or next 5 months. They don't mind doing that. So if you go out there and you find the best possible price, or the best price you can get. Obviously, if it, the best price is at Pinnacle, you can't sign up at Pinnacle because U.S. players can't create new accounts at Pinnacle. So if you sign up at the best U.S.-facing book that you can, get the best price that you can, that's creating value, and the market inherently creates value for you because of its competitive nature. So it's a little bit of both to answer the question here, where you can create value for yourself by understanding the market and getting the best price, but the market creates value by giving you those opportunities to get those prices. So, you know, I think that one of the things that I've done a pretty good job of here on this show and really on Bang the Book Radio overall is to show you that this is a lot more than handicapping. Handicapping is breaking down the game. It's looking at the stats. It's looking at the matchups, looking at the situations, all those types of things. The betting comes in when you get out in front of the market, when you shop around for different prices, when you have an understanding of, you know, the opportunities for arbitrage, even if you don't do it, you understand the context of line moves, with a line moving one way, coming back the other way. A lot of important betting concepts out there that a lot of people don't understand, including bankroll management. I think that's what separates our show from a lot of the shows that are out there. So great question, Steven Stefan. I apologize if I butchered it the first time, but great question. And I think that there, you know, probably is value in the Dodgers, even though they are one of the favorites to win this thing. Doug via email with our second and final question here says, there was a lot of talk about what is commonly referred to as line reversals and big line moves close to the start of a game in particular. This is usually referred to being done as by a sharp or by a whale close to game time. Can you give me some examples of what kinds of information a sharp or a whale might be able to obtain close to the game that the rest of the general public would not have access to? So when you talk about line moves right before a game or on game day specifically, I don't know how often that information is intel. I think a lot of times it can be. It can be an injury, a sickness, a late lineup change, something like that. But a lot of times, too, it's simply a group with substantial money getting the target price that they wanted or taking something very close to that target price that they want. We see this a lot in the NFL and in college football. And keep in mind, too, that, you know, one book may get hit very hard at +7 -115. All of a sudden, they're going to make a move and other books are going to copycat that move. You got to keep that in mind here, too, that, you know, a lot of times this is a hit that happens at one sports book, but the ripples kind of make everybody, you know, take some sort of action. You know, it may be a situation where somebody wants +125 on a baseball side and one book gets there. They take a big hit on that number. All of a sudden they drop to say maybe +118 or +120, something like that. Well, the rest of the market, depending on the risk management profile of that specific book, is going to see that move and do what's called moving on air, where they're not getting the action, but they're going to move anyway. So sometimes it's not an injury thing. Sometimes it's just a price grab at a certain book that creates a ripple effect out there in the market, and everybody else moves. Because you don't want to get caught with your pants down. You know, if you see somebody take a hit at +125, you're sitting there at +120, you're wondering, was it the price? Was it an injury that hasn't hit the wire yet? Is it a sickness? Is it a lineup change? Is it a weather report? Is it, you know, something else? They may not necessarily know immediately, but they're going to take those steps anyway to go from +120 down to +115 because somebody out in the market got hit and they don't want to be the next ones that get hit. So there are a lot of copycat moves. There is a lot of moving on air that gets done out there in the marketplace. That's something that you want to keep in mind, especially with some of these books that are intolerant to risk. Some of the very public shops that are out there that don't encourage sharp action, when they see a big outlet move like a Pinnacle or a Bookmaker, something like that, they're going to assume, okay, that's the sharp side. We've got to protect ourselves. We have to protect ourselves from the few sharp clients that we do allow, or from steam chasers that follow the market, stuff like that. So it may not necessarily be an injury, a weather report, a pitching change, something like that. It may just be fear. It may just be fear in the market that some influential group or some influential individual took a position on a side or a total, and now they're going to scramble to change it. Because, you know, sometimes it's somebody who has clients. You know, somebody who moves lines out there in the marketplace may have clients that they just released a play to. Now that's going to have a ripple effect throughout the market. Or it may just be the steam chasers that I mentioned. And there are a lot of people out there that do that. They start to see sides moving. They hop on because they say, well, somebody must know something that I don't. Maybe they don't. Maybe they just had a target number in mind, hit that target number. There is no lineup change. There is no injury. There is no illness. There is no weather report change, something like that. Now, I will say when it comes to the NFL and college football, we have seen a lot of game day moves, particularly of a sharper nature than we have in, you know, several years. That has been a thing over the last couple of years. I do think that's largely based on injury reports. But, you know, when you look at Major League Baseball here, for example, for the first game of a series, we don't know umpire assignments until a few hours before. So you will see some line moves out there in the marketplace based on those umpire announcements, especially from a total standpoint, but maybe from a side standpoint. You know, if you've got a guy with a big strike zone and a strikeout pitcher with good command, he's probably going to take money with that umpire announcement. If you've got a guy with a small zone and a starter who has questionable control, you may see money come in against that guy. So there are situations like that over the course of game day, but you got to keep in mind here that, you know, limits progressively increase. We talk specifically about football. Limits early in the week are very, very low. When you get to the middle of the week, they increase. When you get to game day, they're the highest that they're going to be. You know, sometimes you may see a group bet 50,000 on a side, try to massage that number a little bit later in the week when limits are higher, come back over the top at their target number for $100,000. Those are things that will move lines as well and could move lines on game days. Somebody may have $75,000 in a position on a team, you know, plus three, minus 05 from early in the week. Maybe that line comes down to 2.5. They hit that number big for, you know, $150,000. Well, all of a sudden that line goes back to three, or maybe even goes to three, you know, minus 115, something like that. That's not because of an injury. That's not because of a lineup change or something else. That's because somebody got the number that they wanted and put a significant bet on it. And like I said, sometimes you'll have the books that move on air from those larger positions that have been taken as well. So line moves right before games are not always about injuries or lineup changes, something like that. They may just be about the influence that some people have in the market and what they can do once they get their money down. You know, lines are tight. Talent gaps are smaller than they've ever been before. There's a lot of market manipulation that goes on out there. And I've talked about this on the show this year that we're seeing a lot of arbitrage. A lot of times we would see 25-cent line moves that would stay there. Now we're seeing 25-cent line moves that come back 10 or 15 cents as we get closer to the game. Market manipulation is a great strategy. Maybe it's more important than ever before because the margins for winning are so small. And obviously a lot of us can't move around the capital to do that. But we will see line moves predicated on that in the marketplace. You got to keep in mind that, you know, if you've got a lot of $100 bettors, they can do some damage to a line if everything is really one-sided. But you get that one big player that comes back in, either balances out the action or comes over the top, that's going to create a line move. So in a market like baseball, you know, the quant guys do have an impact when lineups are released, stuff like that. Then obviously in the NBA when guys are sitting out all the time, but it may not always be an injury or a lineup change. It may just be books having to cover their positions, other books moving on air, books that are intolerant to risk, taking even sharper moves and even sharper positions when they see something out there happening in the market. So it's not always that. It's not always something that we don't know. Sometimes it's just financials that, you know, we can't see, but we can make inferences about. So, Doug, great question. Two very strong questions here this week for the Monday Mailbag. There's a lot of nuance and a lot of depth to this industry. It's not just trying to pick a winner and handicapping the matchups. It's a lot of stuff financially that, you know, we don't necessarily see. We're not necessarily privy to. So a lot of stuff going on out there in the markets on a daily basis that does move these lines around, does manipulate them quite a bit. And that's kind of speaking to, you know, the concept of value. And then also the concept of these late line moves right before games or on game day. Again, Adam at bangthebook.com via email for the Monday Mailbag questions and at Skating Tripods on Twitter. Let's take a look here beyond the box. Let's start with the Rangers taking 2 out of 3 on the road from the Reds. And I got to say this, Joey Gallo has been out for a couple of weeks now. The Rangers are 6th in runs scored in that span since Gallo went down. But they're only batting .257 with a .336 on base, .386 slugging, .311 weighted on base average, .87 WRC+. They're the only team in the top 15 in runs scored over the last 2 weeks with a weighted runs created plus under 100. So I think this is getting to be a good time to fade the Rangers. Their pitching staff is pretty weak. The market's looking to fade Mike Minor. I'm looking for a Rangers fade here. We'll see if I'm on any of these games with the Indians down in Arlington this week. They got Mike Clevinger on the bump tonight, but I am looking to fade this Rangers offense a little bit. So maybe some unders, maybe some plays on the other side. But when you look at this Rangers team here, they've been very, very fortunate in those higher leverage plate appearances without Gallo. They're not creating as many opportunities, but they're cashing in at a high rate. I think that the Rangers are probably a little bit of a fade team here. Now, when you look back at this series against the Reds, they used a triple opener on Friday before they went to Drew Smyly. He wound up picking up the three-inning save in that one. They were up 7-0. But, you know, money came in against money's been coming in against Mike Minor a lot. He outlasted Tanner Roark in that start on Saturday. Money actually came in on Minor in that one. And then we saw Ariel Jurado get rocked on Sunday. Sonny Gray wasn't great, but he was good enough because the Reds gave him some offensive support there. But really what I wanted to talk about from this series is that I think it's time to fade the Rangers. They've been an overachiever here already this season. The fact that they've been pretty competent here without Gallo, despite you know some pretty lackluster offensive numbers, does suggest to me that it's probably a good time to look to fade the Rangers here. The Angels and the Rays split their four-game series. Tough underbeat for us on Sunday. Some runs in the middle innings and then some runs late in that one. But one thing I did take away from this series here, the Angels were abysmal against lefties early on in the season, which was very surprising because they had a very right-handed heavy lineup. They've gotten much better against lefties here of late. Got 5 runs in 6 innings off Ryan Yarbrough in the first game. They knocked out Blake Snell after only 3 1/3 in the second game. Got a couple of runs off of Jalen Beeks, who's been very hard to score off of. The Rays allowed 19 runs in this four-game series to the Angels, which isn't great. Obviously, it's just under 5 runs per game, but not many teams have done that to the Rays here. This Angels lineup, very low swing and miss. And one thing that you can do against teams that record a lot of strikeouts, you can have success in early count situations because you know, they're using fastballs. They're saving their put-away pitches until later in the count. The Angels lineup swings early in the count. They're very aggressive with the bases empty, very low swing and miss rates. When they face better pitching staffs, they're probably better equipped to have success than a lot of other teams that are out there. They had some success here in this series against the Rays. So the Angels, you can see why they keep taking money in the marketplace on a pretty regular basis here of late. The Phillies and the Braves. The Phillies had a bullpen melt in game one, winds up costing them the series. The Braves had a 9th inning melt in game two defensively, and then the Phillies blow it out in game three. It's amazing this season how many bullpen issues we've had in the 7th and 8th innings here so far. But, you know, it's one of those things where you may just be better off playing a lot of first five lines, especially here in the middle portion of the season when you know, those relievers start to fatigue a little bit, a lot of workload. Not many days off here. Maybe the first five, the way to start attacking some of these games. But when I look at the Phillies here, this patchwork starting rotation is starting to have a lot of issues. So they should be in the trade market for Madison Bumgarner or Trevor Bauer. We'll see if they are. But Jake Arrieta, who goes tonight, has been very mediocre, if not bad. Aaron Nola has not been great. He's not been that elite guy we expected. Vince Velasquez as an opener hasn't worked out. Gerard Eichhoff to the bullpen, not working. And I mentioned recently here, with their overachievement on both offense and on the pitching side, they're a fade team for me right now. You know, I know offensively they've got some pieces and parts, but, you know, this bullpen, it's very inconsistent. The starting staff is not good overall. You know, they're going to start to feel that loss of McCutchen at the top of the order as we get further away from that injury. Unless they make some transactions and make some moves, they're on my fade list here for the near future. And, you know, we kind of saw some of their problems pop up a little bit in this series here against Atlanta. How about the absurdity of this Padres-Rockies series? 15 runs in the first game. We were on the under in that one. 28 runs in the second game. 22 runs in the third game. 27 runs in the fourth game. 92 runs in this series. 18 first inning runs. Amazingly enough, only, I say only, 17 home runs in this series with the 92 runs, but 5 of them coming from Hunter Renfroe. Germán Márquez, 5 2/3, 10 hits, 7 runs, walked 4, struck out 8. He still can't figure out Coors Field. Kyle Freeland still hurt. Lots of stuff going on with this Colorado rotation. How about the Nick Margavicius start here? He gave up 9 runs on 11 hits, an inning and a third. Gave up a solo home run to Charlie Blackmon and a double. He gave up 9 singles in an inning and a third. That's crazy. I mean, talk about having no batted ball luck whatsoever for Nick Margavicius. The interesting thing, he gave up 9 runs on 11 hits in an inning and a third, and the Padres won that game. Crazy, crazy series here. Lots of bullpen usage for the Rockies in this series. Not as bad for the Padres. Robbie Erlin wore 1 through 71 pitches in relief. I think he's on the IL or got sent down. They had some guys that they sent down after working some mop-up duty here. So the Padres, you know, their bullpen's worked a lot here this season anyway. But the Rockies came out of this series a little bit worse for wear, although they do have today off, whereas the Padres are hosting the Brewers in San Diego here in tonight's game. Let's go through some exit velocity stuff here on today's show. Let's talk about highest and lowest rates of hard contact. So the most 95-plus batted balls allowed this season. Mike Leake, 133. Herman Marquez, 130. Madison Bumgarner, 115. Dakota Hudson, 112. Brad Keller, 110. Marco Gonzalez, 108. Reynaldo Lopez, also 108. Andrew Cashner, 106. Antonio Senzatella and Adrian Sampson, 105. So this is the highest number of 95-plus batted balls. And again, remember, batting average about 525, wOBA about 680 or 6, I don't know, about 665 on 95-plus batted balls. So these guys are allowing a lot of hard contact. Not surprisingly, most of them struggling in the ERA department. Madison Bumgarner is a pretty interesting name to be thrown in there. He's actually pitched fairly well this season. But those are your guys that allow the most 95-plus batted balls. Lots of hard contact. The more hard contact, the harder it is for a lot of these guys. So Leake, Marquez, Bumgarner, Hudson, Keller, Gonzalez, Reynaldo Lopez, Cashner, Senzatella, and Sampson, all guys that allow a lot of hard contact. So against potent offensive lineups, in bad ballparks for pitching, those are guys that you want to look to fade because they allow a lot of hard contact. Now we look at the highest percentage of batted balls of 95-plus miles per hour put into play. Dan Straley, 48.5%. 48.5% of Straley's balls in play have been 95-plus miles per hour. David Hess, 47.5%. Carlos Carrasco, who is out with that illness, 47.3%. Senzatella, also 47.3%. Cashner, 46.9%. John Gray at 46%. A lot of hard contact for him. Shane Bieber, 45.8%. Sampson, 44.9%. Wade LeBlanc, a lot of hard contact, 44.7%. And then Jorge Lopez, 44.1. So when these guys allow balls in play, a lot of hard contact. Bieber's a guy I've mentioned before. I'll talk about him a little bit later in the show. John Gray, poor command. Not great when you talk about pitching at Coors Field. So a lot of worries there with that. So again, these are guys that allow a lot of hard contact, a high percentage of hard contact. The reason Bieber not in the first group is because of his strikeout rate. When he does allow balls in play, they tend to be hit pretty hard. So again, you want to try to shy away or fade guys that allow a lot of hard contact. Most 100-plus miles per hour batted balls allowed. Very interesting list here. Mike Leake, Herman Marquez, not a surprise. Dakota Hudson, not a surprise. Daniel Norris, a lot of very high-velocity contact, a guy that the market has faded quite a bit here this season. Reynaldo Lopez once again, Madison Bumgarner, Ivan Nova, Shane Bieber once again making an appearance. A lot of high velocity contact against all of these guys. Brad Keller, how about Patrick Corbin? A lot of 100-plus batted balls. Speaks to the drop in slider command. He pitches tonight, by the way, against the Phillies. That's a total that's gone up a full run since it opened from 9 to 10. Merrill Kelly, how about Cole Hamels on the list here? Brett Anderson and John Gray making another appearance. 100-plus batted balls. That's a lot of high-velocity contact. That's very worrisome from those guys here on that list. So, again, Leake, Marquez, Hudson, Norris, Lopez, Bumgarner, Nova, Bieber, Keller, Corbin, Kelly, Hamels, Anderson, and Gray. Some guys on that list that are thought to be very good starting pitchers but are still allowing a lot of high-velocity contact. And 100-plus mile-per-hour batted balls are very, very bad. Very bad. Probably a batting average around 600. I would say a wOBA in the 750 range. 100-plus batted balls, those are your doubles and home runs. So some guys allowing a lot of hard contact here so far this season. The fewest number of 95-plus batted balls, this is minimum 1,000 pitches as a starting pitcher. We've got Zach Godley, Yanni Chirinos, Blake Snell, Kenta Maeda, Anibal Sanchez, Martin Perez, Chris Paddock, John Means for the Baltimore Orioles, Jake Odorizzi, and Caleb Smith. Godley has not had success with this. The rest of these guys have had a lot of success with this at inducing weaker contact. Fewest number of 95-plus batted balls. Again, Chirinos, Snell, couple of Rays there. You've got Sanchez for the Nationals, Maeda for the Dodgers. These guys really limiting hard contact. When you limit hard contact, you can have a lot of success in this business. So those are guys that you want to keep in mind as guys you want to look to back or bet unders with because they limit that hard contact. They limit the contact that generally brings about doubles and home runs. That's how you do a lot of your scoring here in 2019 in the big leagues. The lowest hard hit percentage, so this is percentage of batted balls of 95-plus miles per hour. The lowest guys, Martin Perez, 26.9%. Anibal Sanchez, 27%. Maeda, 27.9%. Eduardo Rodriguez, 28.9%. Snell, 29.4%. Dylan Bundy, 29.4%. Lance Lynn, 30%. Brandon Woodruff, 30.1%. Noah Syndergaard, 30.4%. Hyunjin Ryu, 30.7%. And then the next five, Barrios, Beeks, Alcantara, Sandy Alcantara, Lucchesi, and Soroka. So those 15 guys, really limiting hard contact. That goes a long, long way in preventing run scoring. So those are guys that you want to look to back and, again, bet unders with. Again, adam@bangthebook.com via email to get these lists. They will help you with the notes for the show. Fewest number of 100-plus batted balls. Blake Snell, Chris Paddock, Zach Godley, Mike Soroka, Yulis Chacin, ironically enough, having a terrible season. Martin Perez, Jake Odorizzi, Yanni Chirinos, Jacob DeGrom, Anibal Sanchez. So those are guys really doing a good job limiting that ultra-hard contact against. So again, very important lists here. Again, you want to look to fade or bet overs with the guys that allow a lot of hard contact. Bet on or bet unders with the guys that really do a good job of limiting the hard contact. All right, let's go down the lines here. Talk about some line moves dating back to Friday. Pretty quiet overall on Friday. We saw a little bit of yo-yoing with the Zach Davies, Drew Pomerantz line. Talked about that one in my article on Friday. Had some positive feedback on Twitter about it. Davies, a regression candidate. Pomerantz, a big ex-Woba positive regression candidate. So that line didn't really move a whole lot. You would have expected people to come in on Davies. Some sharper guys did take Pomerantz early on with that line move, and the Giants did come away with the victory there in that one. Friday, we saw money against Blake Snell. Always intriguing when you get line moves against guys that take a lot of money. Snell, one of them here. That was Andrew Heaney and the Angels there in that one. Angels taking a lot of money still, as we know, but when you see money come in on guys that usually get faded or you see money come in against guys that the market usually backs, that says a lot to you out there in the marketplace. Saw very heavy Kyle Gibson money for the Twins against the Royals. Big push out there to fade Brad Keller. That one did work out once again for the market. Interestingly enough, again on Friday, that Sabathia and Giolito line barely moved. And I talked about that one in my picks and tips piece. The market has been against Sabathia a lot. Giolito's been as good as humanly possible over his last eight starts, pitched pretty well in this one again. That line didn't move. Very interesting to see that with what's usually a fade of Sabathia against the guy in Giolito pitching very well. There's some skepticism about Giolito out there in the marketplace. I don't know how many more starts he needs to answer it. He hasn't answered it for me yet, but still interesting to not see that line move on Sabathia, a sign to me that the market has not fully bought in with Lucas Giolito. So Gerrit Cole money on Friday against Anibal Sanchez and the Blue Jays. Once again, Gerrit Cole, he gets steamed just about every time he takes the mound. So again, another guy, if money comes in against him, that should definitely perk your spidey senses a lot because it does not happen often. Saturday, we saw heavy money on Steven Strasburg fail. That didn't work out in the marketplace. We saw the Marlins in an uncomfortably large favorite role. They're about minus 125 favorite. The market came in against them. they still happened to come away with the victory in that one. We didn't see money on Noah Syndergaard, who is a big ex-Woba positive regression candidate. Now he's on the injured list with that bulky hamstring again. Once again, interesting to not see Thor money come in. That command profile just hasn't been good enough. Chris Sale took money against the Orioles. That'll happen all the time. Sale takes money all the time as well, much like a guy like Garrett Cole. We saw a slight fade of Shane Bieber against the Tigers. The Tigers have a bad lineup, though. Shane Bieber pitches Thursday in Texas against Mike Minor. I'll be very interested to see where the market saddles up in this one, because Bieber is a fade guy from a contact metric standpoint, but the market's been coming in against Mike Minor pretty much every start he's made over the last five or six starts. So what happens with that line move on Thursday? I'll be very interested to see what happens there. Getaway day game, Indians coming back home off of a road trip. I'll be very intrigued to see how that line sets up for that Thursday day game in Arlington. Sunday, we saw Dakota Hudson money hit the board against Jason Vargas. Again, Dakota Hudson has allowed a lot of hard contact this year, but a lot of it on the ground. Vargas, not really a guy that the market believes in at this point in time. We saw Chris Archer money come in on Sunday against the Marlins. That did come through. Archer did not pitch well, but interesting to see money coming back in on Archer when the market has kind of sworn him off a little bit here of late. Saw a fade of Jeff Samardzija on Sunday. That was the Giants against the Brewers and Chase Anderson. Brewers looking to avoid the sweep there, and they did. Not a lot of love for Samardzija out there in the marketplace. We saw money on Griffin Canning and the Angels on Sunday against the Rays. Opener Ryan Stanek there in that one. A lot of Angels money still out there in the marketplace, as I mentioned many times over. Saw some steam on Trevor Bauer. That was a winner. Also saw some steam on Sonny Gray against the Rangers. Ariel Jurado going for the Rangers in that one. Gray took very heavy money, actually, in that game, which is kind of a sign to me that I think the market agrees with me with my stance on fading the Rangers. I think that will be a thing here as we go forward. It's not a thing tonight with Clevinger making his first start off the DL, but I do think it will keep being a thing as we go throughout this week and head on into the weekend as well. Monday, we're seeing some Patrick Corbin money leak into the market. I've got a full breakdown over in my article at bangthebook.com on Corbin and what I'm concerned about. So please go and check that out. No pick on that game, but I do think it's some good information that you want to read about Patrick Corbin. Seeing money come in against Mike Soroka. He's a little bit of an ex-Woba regression candidate. Been very, very fortunate. High left on base percentage. Market looking to fade him here. Like I said, a little bit of Texas money showing up with Clevinger in his first start back. I don't think that's a concrete line move. I think that's a move where that one's going to kind of go back and forth here as you go throughout the day. Seeing some, actually, I'm going to take the Mariners tonight. Go ahead and give you my pick for this evening's action. For the first five here, fading Danny Duffy against a right-handed heavy lineup. We are starting to see some Mariners money in that one. The Royals are awful against lefties. I'll talk about that angle here in a couple of minutes. But right-handed heavy lineup against Duffy, hits a lot of fly balls, hits for power. Mariners first five tonight, and also I think that's a line that'll be on the move as we go throughout the day here. Also another line move, seeing a little bit of money on Luis Castillo and the Reds as they take on the Astros. Some people are going to take the Astros at plus money as an auto play, not the market right now, though. Fade of Wade Miley. We've seen a lot of Wade Miley fades as this season's gone along. I do like the under in that Astros-Reds game tonight, though. All right, so at the week ahead here, seven series on the docket to touch on real quickly. Phillies and Nationals, the first one here. Jake Arrieta, Patrick Corbin tonight. Zach Eflin, Eric Fetty tomorrow. Nick Pivetta, Max Scherzer on Wednesday. And then Aaron Nola, Steven Strasburg on Thursday for this four-game series. I like the Nationals a little bit here this week. They're figuring things out. They're hitting with a healthy offense. They face the two stronger Philly starters in Pivetta and Nola with their aces on the mound. Eflin was very good last time out, but the market is fading Zach Eflin. I think we see an Eric Fetty line move on Tuesday, so keep an eye out for that. Maybe jump on the Nationals on the overnight lines, but I do like the Nationals in this series, and as I mentioned, looking for opportunities to fade the Phillies here in the short term. Indians and Rangers, we got a four-game series here in this one. Mike Clevinger, Lance Lynn tonight, very good pitching matchup. Zach Plesac, Adrian Sampson tomorrow, and as I mentioned, Sampson, a lot of hard contact this season. Something to watch for against a left-handed heavy Indians lineup. Adam Plutko in an opener on Wednesday, and then Shane Bieber and Mike Minor on Thursday. I'll probably look to fade Bieber on Thursday, but I may wait that one out with that money expected to come in against Mike Minor. The Indians are trying to find that second gear, though. They played well against the Twins and Yankees, split with the Reds, swept the Tigers. They're trying to make up some ground here. This is the last good opponent that they'll play before the All-Star break. So good test for them down in Arlington this week. Rays and the Yankees. Yanni Chirinos, Masahiro Tanaka tonight. Ryan Yarbrough, Jay Happ tomorrow. Blake Snell, CC Sabathia on Wednesday. The Yankees host the Astros next weekend. So a big week for them. But Ryan Yarbrough falling off a little bit now in that full starter role. Maybe we see Stanek as the opener on Tuesday. I think that would make sense for them. But we will definitely see some Blake Snell steam coming in on Wednesday. I would certainly be on the lookout for that in this Rays and Yankees series with Sabathia going on Wednesday for the Yankees. Red Sox and the Twins. Rick Porcello, Jose Berríos tonight. David Price, Michael Pineda tomorrow. Eduardo Rodriguez, Kyle Gibson on Wednesday. The Twins are really stepping up in class here. They've played the second fewest number of games against teams with a 500 or better record. They get one here this week in the Red Sox. Rodriguez with a low hard contact rate against a Twins team built on slugging percentage. I like the Red Sox series price here. I know they're a dog tonight, but I like the matchups for them on Tuesday and Wednesday. So I like the Boston series price. Now, of course, if they lose tonight, you can play a money line rollover Tuesday and Wednesday, probably a little bit better than the series price that's out there. But I do like Boston to win this series over the Twins, who are stepping up in class and are getting a couple of tough lefties on Tuesday and Wednesday, guys that usually stay out of the nitro zone and can induce weak contact in Price and Rodriguez against Pineda and Gibson, two guys I'm not fully buying in with. So I like the Red Sox series price here for this week. Brewers and the Padres. You got Yulis Chacin, Joey Lucchesi tonight. Brandon Woodruff and Matt Strom tomorrow, which I'll be looking for the under. It'll be under 7. I like the under in that game tomorrow. Then Zach Davies, Cal Quantrill on Wednesday. Will we see that Zach Davies fade in the getaway game? That's what we'll have to wait and see. But I do think that Tuesday night gives us a good opportunity to play the under, maybe a first 5 under to avoid. But both of these bullpens pretty decent as well. So maybe a full game under there for Woodruff and Strom. Maybe Strom's bad start last time out gives us a 7.5 here. I doubt it, but I'm kind of hoping that's the case. Astros and the Reds. Wade Miley, Luis Castillo tonight. Justin Verlander, Anthony DeSclafani on Tuesday. Tyler Mail on Wednesday. We'll see a Verlander fade on Tuesday in the small park. Reds taking on money with fair regularity here. We'll see that line come down with Verlander and DeSclafani on Tuesday. We'll see the Garrett Cole steam coming up here on Wednesday. Shout out to listener at JohnRoy76 on Twitter, mentioning and tweeting at me here that the Angels, Indians, Astros, Orioles, and Royals all traveling over 1,000 miles to a new city with no rest, and they are the visiting team in all 5 of those matchups. So pretty interesting there. You've got the Angels going to Toronto, the Indians going to Texas, Astros to Cincinnati, Orioles out west to Oakland, and the Royals to Seattle. So great angle there with 5 teams making long trips to where they're still on the road. Now, the Royals are getting 3 lefties in that series against the Mariners. They're getting Tommy Malone tonight, Yusei Kikuchi tomorrow, Marco Gonzalez on Wednesday. The Royals are a league average offense against righties, but they're horrible against lefties. They rank 28th in WOBA against left-handed pitching. So long trip, a lot of lefties. Give me the series price for the Mariners here this week. I think there's very, very good equity, very good value in that. They could end up sweeping this series. It would not surprise me at all. I like the Seattle series price here this week against the Royals. All right, a lot of stuff here today on this 45-minute edition of the Bettors Box. We'll have another edition of the Bettors Box coming your way on Thursday. Going to take some time here this week to work on my college football stuff, get those power ratings up, get a home field advantage update posted. We got golf to talk about, the Travelers Championship. I'll preview that over at bangthebook.com here today. Going to pick up the NFC West for NFL season win totals also. So going to be a very busy beaver here this week at Skating Tripods on Twitter, Adam at bangthebook.com to get the notes for the show. A lot of stuff going on here. Lots of good stuff going on over at bangthebook.com as well. So keep it tuned to everything that we've got going on. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you'll never strike out when you're in the batter's box.